Hello everyone, well welcome and thank you for coming on this extremely cold Sunday evening. It's good to see so many people here. We've got a discussion for you this evening. We have two speakers who are going to introduce the topic. On my left here we have Federico Pestono, who is speaking on behalf of the Zeitgeist movement. On my right we've got Clifford Slapper, speaking on behalf of the Socialist Party. Now, they're going to introduce a discussion on the grounds, will there be an economic collapse? And the origins of this came when Federico, one of our members, I think, went to a talk by Federico at the Zeitgeist Movement, and Federico has just published a book called, it's a long title, so I think I will need to read this, Robots Will Steal Your Job, But That's Okay, How to Survive the Economic Collapse and Be Happy. Okay, so that more or less started off the idea of this debate. Okay, the first speaker is going to be Federico. He's going to be introducing the topic, will there be an economic collapse as a result of the increasing use of robotics? Is that right?
Loosely.
Loosely, okay. All right, loosely that's the topic.
Okay, hello everyone, and thanks for coming in such abundant and copious numbers. First of all, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Zeitgeist movement, although I am, say, one of the more prominent speakers. I speak on behalf of myself, although I agree with, you know, obviously the Zeitgeist movement because I'm a part of it, I'd like, you know, just to make it clear that I'm presenting my ideas. I started thinking about the topic of technological employment, which loosely states that technology, as it advances, it displaces human labor, and that's fine. But if the ability of the market to create new jobs for people, if that process isn't fast as the advances that technology actually creates, there's going to be a problem. So if technology displaces more labor than the market is able to create as a result of that, then you've got a number of people who are out of a job and will never get a job again. So, for instance, with the agricultural revolution, or the industrial revolution, you know, the Iceman or the guy who was standing just outside of the elevator and, you know, bringing it up and down, that guy lost his job, but he found a new job somewhere else. That's not technological employment. It's just a cycle that happens with the market. Well, if I displace, let's say, all the drivers everywhere in the world within, let's say, 10 years' time, and those millions of people who've been displaced cannot find another job anywhere because their ability to adapt to this change isn't quite fast enough, then you have technological employment. The reason we didn't experience massive technological employment in the past, I think, is because as technology progressed, we could invent new kinds of jobs and new sectors because we had the time to adjust. But technology now is advancing so rapidly that so many jobs are being displaced, and we're not quick enough at educating people into new kinds of jobs. So we might be able to find new kinds of jobs. For instance, right now, there is a shortage of biotechnologists. There is a shortage of DNA analysts and biogeneticists and computer programmers. But the education system isn't producing them, isn't educating enough people for these kinds of jobs. And technology just becomes faster and faster. And I just want you to get a feeling of how quick technology is actually progressing. If you take... Are you familiar with the game of 30 Steps?
Sorry?
It's called 30 Steps. No. If you take 30 steps linearly, that's 1, 2, and 3. Let's say I go, you know, straight that direction, 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Once I get to 30, I'm, you know, the end of the street, whatever, you know, that building over there. Yeah. But if I take 30 steps exponentially, 2, 4, 8, 16, what do I get? If I go, I don't know, that way, let's suppose it's east.
You multiply.
Yeah, enormous. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So where do I get? Let's say I go east from here. with 30 step with 30 exponential steps, 1 meter each.
Stockholm.
So, the answer is that I can get to the moon, and then I get back, and then I've got still enough steps to circle the Earth 8 times over, because you make 1 billion steps. Now, technology does advance so rapidly, and if you just think about this device here that I'm holding, it's 10,000 times more powerful. What? Standing up. Okay, sure. Can you all see me now?
We can.
Okay, so this device that I'm holding is 10,000 times more powerful and 1 million times less expensive than the equivalent that was used 40 years ago and used to, you know, take up all the space in this room, probably also the other building, and used 1 million times more energy. Right, and that was just 40 years ago. It was $100 million and, you know, acquired a whole building to put. And now this device is like that. Now, technology does advance exponentially, means it doubles in performance, price performance, approximately every year, which means the computing power of this device in 20 years will be as big as a blood cell. Now, the brain is capable of approximately 10 to the 16 operations per second. Now, somebody says 10 to the 17, some says 10 to the 18, it doesn't matter. The thing is, this does, I don't know, 10 to the 12 operations per second. A few years, and this will be as smart, potentially, as a human being. And in some respect, lots of computers, especially now that we have cloud computing, so thousands of computers clustered together, and we access their computing power from the net, from the internet, they are performing at the level of humans, or even better, in some respects. So computers and artificial intelligence and robots, they're not replacing everything we do just because we haven't used them for everything yet, and because they're not as powerful as the human brain, but they're already displacing. I'll give an example of evidence of automation in the book. For instance, warehouse, right? Let's suppose you have a warehouse with thousands or maybe tens of thousands of orders every day, and you've got to get the shipment and your item and put a barcode and put it somewhere, put a box. If a warehouse needed, 1,000 people to work inside a few years ago, now you just need maybe 5. Everything else is done by robots. And they find the optimal path, they pick up the stuff, they bring it somewhere. Amazon bought Kiva System, a company that produces such robots, for almost $800 million, and they're fulfilling millions of orders every day automatically without the need of any human. So these guys who've been replaced by these robots, they say, well, they can do another job. Yeah, but the kind of job that they can do with their level of education is the kind of job that's going to be replaced by machines in a couple of years, or maybe 5. So given all this, I think there's going to be a problem in society, a huge problem, where the number of people who actually get the money to survive is reduced and reduced and reduced to a point where... So on one side, you've got unemployment rising, and we are experiencing right now in the Eurozone the biggest unemployment crisis in modern history. And there doesn't seem to be any slowing down. And partially it's because of the financial system that's corrupt and the bad policies that politicians make. But largely, I think, it's because really of technological employment, because there aren't just enough jobs that people can do. And the kinds of jobs that people could do are too difficult for most people because they haven't been educated in that kind of mindset. So I think there are lots of challenges, but these challenges could be solved if we take a different approach with regards to what it means to actually live your life and work and do something. So I think I'll leave that for Q&A, but I'll just give you a hint. The same technologies that are displacing our labor could be the technologies that free us from the shackle of working for survival. Because imagine, what do you need to survive? You need food, you need energy, you need heat, you need a house, you need water. All of these things are starting to be, to become free if you know how to properly use technologies. Open Source Ecology is one such organization that's creating what's called the Civilization Starter Kit, a set of 50 industrial machines that they release all the technical specifications to build these 50 industrial machines, from a tractor to a soil pulverizer to a laser cutter, to create a self-sustaining community with the local resources available somewhere without the need of really any money. And with this kind of technology, you don't go back to live, you know, the way we lived 200 years ago. You can actually live with the standard of living of today's living. So as these technologies advance and as we make them more open source, you can get electricity from a wind turbine, which could be designed and produced through open source projects and means and open source licenses. You can get the materials from the local ground where you actually live. And the food that you produce, you can use permaculture, you can use hydroponics, you can use so many systems that could be improved upon by the people who actually contribute to these projects. So you can produce your food locally and exchange it with your neighbor and have a community and actually rediscover the sense of compassion and feeling a relationship with your neighbor, with your family. You can produce energy through solar panels and wind turbines, and these could be 3D printed using a 3D printer which is self-replicating and open source. So you've got like a printer that prints a physical object like this one, and the printer itself was free because it was open source, and the printer itself could be replicated. So imagine right now we've got something called the RepRap, which is an open source 3D printer that can print up to 60% of itself. And the goal in a few years to have a 3D printer that prints 100% of itself. So you've got a 3D printer that prints any object in any material, or almost any material, plastic, iron, chromium, titanium, glass, wood, biopolymers, plastics. So imagine you've got like the Star Trek replicator, right, that can print anything, even itself, but only if it's open source, only if it's shared. Because right now what they're trying to do is to put DRM, digital rights management, to prevent you from building your own things, from being independent from multinational corporations and the control of the government. So I think through open source, collaboration, technology, and a good mindset, we can actually move forward into a better future. But if we just go with the flow and follow inertia, I think there are going to be lots of problems, and the economic collapse is just the tip of the problems, because we're going to have water shortages, energy shortages, food shortages, riots, massive unemployment, which leads to violence and civil unrest. It's not going to be fun. But if we move to a different direction and we share our knowledge and our resources intelligently, using these exponentially advanced technology to our advantage, then I think we can build a really, really beautiful future.
Okay, thank you, Federico. Basing an argument on the exponential increase in the way in which technology is produced. Okay, I'll now ask Clifford Slapper from the Socialist Party to put the Socialist Party point of view.
Thanks very much. I'd like to start with one random report on wealth ownership in Britain at the moment, out of many, but it's random, but it's still correct. And this was from the April 2012 Sunday Times Rich List. That particular report showed that in Britain at the moment, the richest 1,000 individuals, that's about 1 in 30,000 of the adult population, hold between them a sum of wealth which totals £414 billion. So I'll just go over that again. You have 1,000 individuals in Britain at the moment, just 1,000, only a few times as many people as we have in this room tonight. And those 1,000 individuals between them are currently holding wealth totalling £414,000,000,000. Now, that group of individuals, expressed as a fraction of the adult population, is a tiny, tiny fraction. It's actually 1 in 30,000. 1/30,000th of the population. Really, really minute fraction of the population. And yet the wealth that they hold is absolutely gargantuan. That's the first point I'd ask you to dwell on. Now, within those 1,000 individuals, there is an even greater concentration of control and ownership. It's kind of exponential. So as we look within those 1,000, we look at the 500 richest within those, and they have more than twice as much as the other 500. And so it goes on until we reach a smaller and smaller and more rich group. The 100 richest people all have at least £750 million of assets. So there's concentration within the concentration. Now, over the past 15 years, those 1,000 individuals have increased their wealth. And the amount by which their total collective wealth has increased in the past 15 years is a sum of £315 billion increase. Even in the last 3 years, that handful of people have increased their wealth by a total of £155 billion in just 3 years. That's actually more than the entire UK budget deficit. So the whole budget deficit of this country is less than the amount by which those 1,000 people have increased their wealth, let alone the actual total that they hold. Just the increase that they've enjoyed in the last 3 years is greater than the entire budget deficit of the UK. This leads to the question, where does all this extra value come from? How has this handful of people, anonymous mainly, how have they actually increased their ownership and control of wealth resources in just the last 3 years by such a mind-boggling amount, huge amount, with so many zeros? There's only one source of that extra value in social terms. It has to come ultimately from wealth which is created by people like ourselves. And that really is what lies at the heart of our discussion this evening, because there's one thing which Federico has not made reference to in his comments, and I hope he will do in due course. But so far we haven't heard anything about the real issue for us, which is at the centre of this problem, which is that we don't yet have the right or the opportunity to discuss how we should use wealth resources. We don't yet have the right or the opportunity to talk about how we should control our future, because at the moment that future doesn't belong to us. There is a heavily guarded ownership of wealth throughout the world. All of the key wealth resources, whether it's land, agriculture, industry, all of the minerals that Federico mentioned, chromium, iron, wood and everything else, these are all actually owned and controlled. And it's not some kind of fiction or some kind of fashion that we can just choose to neglect. Because if you actually do try to challenge, as an individual, the ownership by that minority, you will be confronted with armed force. That ownership is actually protected, and often legitimately so in terms of the electorate, it's protected by violent armed force. And if the rest of us try to take access to those resources, we will be threatened with violent armed force. And that's something that I think we need to discuss tonight as to what we're going to do about that. Now, I've started with an example which is very Britain, UK-centric. So let's just supplement that with the Forbes report, which covers the whole world. So the Forbes magazine annual roundup of billionaires, again, we see a huge, enormous increase in wealth by that small minority. Hard to believe that we're in such tough times, double dip recession and all the rest of it. The fact remains that at the moment, according to the Forbes report, there are 1,500 worldwide billionaires, and their average net worth has increased since a year ago. The total net worth of the 1,500 billionaires in the world has increased from $4.6 trillion a year ago to $5.4 trillion. That's a million. 17% increase in wealth ownership by the 1,500 billionaires of the world. Raises the question, what are we going to do about that in our future, where we talk about a rational use of resources, which Federico, I believe, is absolutely right to focus on. We have to use technology for the common good of all. We have to make technology work for us rather than vice versa. We have to create a sustainable future. All of these noble aims the Socialist Party would absolutely endorse and agree with when we hear them from Federico and others. But we feel it's necessary to inject a note of realism into the debate, which is, what are we going to do about the fact that the key resources of the world are currently under armed guard, owned and controlled by a tiny minority who are quite ruthless in defending their power, whether we look on the global scale or, as I say, the British example? The richest man in the world, does anyone know who it is? Used to be Bill Gates, it's not anymore.
The Mexican guy.
Yeah, Carlos Slim. It's kind of ironic that he's called that, isn't it? But again, the latest report shows that his wealth has also hugely increased in the past year by billions and billions of dollars just in one year, currently standing at $73,000 million. But I don't want to just throw numbers at you. It means something real. The fact that one man in our society today can control nearly $100,000 million of wealth, that has a very real meaning. It's not just numbers. It actually represents enormous acres of land that we need to feed people. It actually represents mines. It represents technology itself. So this is the issue. What are we going to do about ownership? I mean, the money that he owns, if you put it in terms of interest rates, if you take $73,000 million and simply enjoy bank interest at current rates, it means you would receive a payment of £15 million for the rest of your life. Not every year, but every day. So much about how the other half live. But I must repeat, this is important to us, not because we envy his isolation or his bizarre social position. It's important to us because it shows the absurdity of modern-day society that one man can be given £15 million every single day of his life without having to work, whilst the rest of us don't earn that much in an entire lifetime, despite working. So this is the absurdity of modern-day society. So let me turn next to the predictions which are core and central to Federico's belief system or philosophy, whatever I'd like to call it. So in the introduction to his book, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it culminates in the sentence, "Soon there will be little left for us to do. Machines will take over." I don't really want to get too involved in the predictions debate for tonight, because I think there are actually more important questions. But if we are going to focus for a minute or two on the actual predictions, I would want to just throw a few question marks over some of this. Soon there will be little left for us to do. Machines will take over. I think it's important to inject a sobering note to the reflection that machines have never come from anywhere other than human ingenuity. They don't actually have a life of their own. Who is going to build, design, maintain and repair these robots? Is it other robots? Who's going to design and repair those? It's actually untrue to believe that you're ever going to have a situation where there's a self-sustaining robot economy which doesn't need any kind of human input. That's patent nonsense. Obviously, these robots have been invented by human beings, and at the present moment, as you know, they are being repaired, maintained, improved by human beings, not by each other. Despite that rather fetching film about the two robots having a love affair on the planet. What was it called? WALL-E. WALL-E is a very nice film, but it is just a children's film. And there have been many earlier examples of predictions made of cataclysmic outcome of technology, which have tended to prove overstated in retrospect. Let's just have a quick look at this exponential idea. If technology doubles its powers every year or two, then Federico's quite right. You have an exponential growth which well, if you're doubling every year, these figures soon become enormous. So it would mean that after 10 times of doubling, 10 times over, you get to 1,024 is 2 to the power of 10. But clearly this doesn't have a direct proportional relationship to unemployment as such. There may be some connection, but it's not directly in proportion. 20 years ago in Britain, the unemployment rate was about 2 million. Over those past 20 years, technology has been increasing exponentially. If unemployment had increased exponentially since 20 years ago, what would the unemployment rate be in Britain today? It would be over 2 billion. Clearly nonsensical. 2 million unemployed 20 years ago. If that increased exponentially over 20 years, it would be a multiplier of 1,024. So we would have 2 billion unemployed in Britain alone. It's clearly nonsense. So it's not, we can't just bandy these figures about without really looking more closely at them. Yes, unemployment may increase structurally. Yes, there may be mass unemployment. But let's not make too many assumptions. I've looked at the long-term unemployment rate over, this is in the States, over the past 50 years. And, of course, there are lots of ups and downs there. And you see this peak here, which was in the 80s, because this starts in the 50s. This doesn't show, obviously, the situation during the 20s. But here you have a long-term peak in the recession there of the 80s, and then it's coming down again. We don't really see a long-term trend upwards as an underlying trend, and yet we kind of should, in a way, because even with Federico saying that we've got this recent exponential growth and recent changes, the fact is we're part of a long-term trend of rapid technological growth. This isn't something new. This is something that's been going on for quite a few years. So if these arguments are true, why hasn't it been happening more to date? Now, I'd like at that point to leave the predictions behind and move on finally to the real question for us as socialists, which is how we relate to each other socially. Technology has advanced rapidly thanks to human ingenuity and human input. It doesn't just advance on its own. But what hasn't advanced are social relationships, the way that social beings, we relate to each other as employer and employee. That's the key relationship in productive society today. And that is really antiquated. In fact, the problem that we should be concerned about is not unemployment, it's employment. It's employment itself that is the real issue and the real problem. The idea of wealth being produced by people who are working for wages, the whole system of employment, which, as Karl Marx quite correctly demonstrated, is based on a form of legalized robbery, in which the surplus value created by those wage workers automatically and legally belongs to their employers, which is how we end up with people that we started off with, like Carlos Slim, who is just accumulating more and more of this unpaid labour from the working class. This is what has to go. In fact, the technological advances, which could become such a wonderful advantage in creating a society where we really could just work for a very few hours each day, we really could spread and share the social tasks that we need to do. We really could create a sustainable ecological future. But we can't do that as long as we still have a capitalist social system. And my concern about what we've heard so far from Federico is that he hasn't addressed that issue nearly enough. I would like him to do so, because it is absolutely essential that we put a stop to capitalism before we can even discuss how we prefer to organise production. And that's why the Socialist Party advocates political action to end capitalism. Those few people who own and control the resources of the world have to be dispossessed of that power. We can't simply allow them. Why should we allow them to carry on monopolising 9/10 of the resources whilst we somehow scrape a living on small allotments or our own tiny freeholdings, or whilst we use this open source ecology to start from scratch and to build small pockets of production? Why should we do that? Why don't we actually go for the whole bakery rather than fiddling with a few crumbs? Why shouldn't we take back the resources which currently are owned and controlled, under armed guard by people like Carlos Slim. Vast, vast resources, as far as the eye can see, which should belong to...
Are you disputing private property?
Which should belong to everyone, yes. Private property, and for that matter, state property, which is simply another form of private property under the control of a bureaucracy. Any form of limited ownership and control of the wealth resources has to go. That's actually the starting point for any future society. And unless we're willing to dispossess the minority of their ownership and control of the world, there's nothing more to debate, because they have control. So I think we're allowing ourselves a luxury this evening if we think we can talk about which is the way forward without first agreeing that we need to take political action to dispossess the minority of their ownership and control of the planet that we live in.